This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2015, held at Faith Builders on August 4 through 7.
There must be a lot of needs in our classrooms. I'm guessing a lot of you chose this class because there are a few students that you're thinking of that you've worked with maybe and you're going to have again in September, and you're thinking, I'm just not sure what's making them tick like this, or why there is so many maybe behavior problems. It seems like you're having a hard time connecting. And I'm no psychologist, but hopefully over the years I have learned something. I think back to some of my first years teaching and students that I had struggles with almost weekly. And I think this just wasn't right. I didn't handle it right. I wish I would have known some of these things. I wish I could have had my experience before I started teaching. They don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And I think that is the thrust of my class, that as we work with children, that we would show them that we really, really care. We want to hear what their heart is saying. We want to hear the things that they are afraid to tell us, or maybe don't know how to tell us. Maybe they can't even put it into words themselves. But there's something there that's hurting them or bothering them. They don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Is there a need for heart listening? We often don't know much about the child's past until they come into our classroom, especially if you're teaching in a different community. We don't know what maybe trauma they might have had, what difficulties their family has had. We don't know much of their history. Sometimes that's to our advantage, but other times we just don't know what might be hurting them. We need to be able to listen to their hearts. I'm sorry, I went too fast. School is often one of the first times when children are left alone without mom and dad in the big, scary world. And maybe up until this point, mom has always answered his questions. And now here they are in grade one, and the teacher is expecting them to talk. And you know, they just don't quite know how. Another reason there is a need is because as teachers, often we have more children in our care than the average parent has. And they all are individuals. They all have unique needs. And the fourth reason I would have why there is a need for this heart listening is because too often teachers find themselves dealing with the same thing time and time again. And we seem like we're not getting below the surface. We're not getting to the root of the problem. And we really, really wish we could. Maybe we think, well, we just dealt with this last week. Like, didn't they learn? Should we assume? And on your handout, I put some beginnings of some wrong assumptions we might make. We might say, the child might say, I don't want to play. And so we assume they're shy, right? Or just not very athletic. Maybe the child shows off, so we assume they're a cut-up. They just like attention. The child doesn't appear motivated. They're just kind of lethargic, easy-go-lucky, just whatever. Don't get involved in much, just kind of watch. Number four, the child's opinion of themselves. You know, they're not good at anything. oh no, my picture's not good at all. You know, that kind of thing. So we say, well, they're just humble. Or the child has trouble paying attention. They don't even care. Every time a tractor goes by, they're lost. Or we have lost them. Or maybe we say they're not able. It's a child that needs remedial help. Same with number six. I get poor grades. Yeah, they're just a hard learner. The last one I have. We might also assume that because there is a behavioral problem, there is a really deep, dark problem in this child's life. And they should, you know, have special counseling, and we should get to the root of the problem. No, be careful. Because children are sometimes shy. Children are sometimes cut-ups. You know, that is sometimes the reason. And then it's right. We can assume that. So just because there is a behavioral problem that we're dealing with the second time doesn't mean that there is some deep, dark thing that has to get discussed. Anything you have questions about so far or would like to comment about these assumptions or others? I welcome your questions, your comments, if you have, just shout them out, interrupt. Okay. We're going to be looking at a few behavioral traits coming up. We're going to look at some of the causes or possible causes. And then just briefly, what might their heart be saying? Or what could we hear if we would be able to hear their heart? And lastly, then, how can we help? How can we best help them through this time? I've only chosen to speak of a few. There are many. But maybe we'll get some of the main ones. So here we have a student that's a show-off. Oh, you know what? Something else I was going to say. These pictures that I have chosen are pictures because they fit the trait. Not necessarily because the child fit the trait. You understand what I mean? Okay. Just a little disclaimer there. So why is a child a show-off? What could be the cause? Any ideas?
They want some recognition.
Mm-hmm. They want recognition. Good. Yes, inferiority. Why are they feeling this? Or what might their lives be like? Why they are feeling inferior or wanting the attention? Think outside your classroom. I'm sorry, I interrupted. Why? What makes a child insecure?
They don't get the attention at home.
Why? Keep going, this is right.
Mom and dad are too busy.
Mom and dad are too busy?
A lot of siblings.
Mm-hmm. A lot of siblings? Say that again. Yes, maybe they hear these negative things at home about themselves. Very often, the child who is feeling insecure and not having enough attention, it goes beyond your classroom. It does. And I think all parents probably go through a time, if they have more than one child, that they wish they would have done things differently. I'll share a personal story. I have not really done this much in public, but I was quite young when my next sibling was born. And she was born with many handicaps. Blind, she was floppy, she just had a lot of needs. And for the next couple years, my parents were absorbed in her. And her therapy, you know, taking her to hospitals, specialists, whatever it is. I had three older siblings, and talking to them now, more that I'm an adult, they remember those times. They, you know, just there was a hired girl, or they were maybe old enough to process it better, to work with it. But I remember, I clearly remember as a child craving attention, craving it, just wanting to sit on Dad's lap, or just really, really wanting to. And my parents, they know about this, and they feel very bad about it. But at the time, it was where they were needed to take care of my sister Arlene. And then even over the time of her death, you know, they were kind of consumed in that. And I think I can understand why. But even as I started school, through most of my school years, I still had this longing to have parental recognition. And my dad was my teacher for several years. And I remember that. I remember almost feeling upset that he gave attention to someone else. You know, he has time for this child, but what about me? And it was something that I had to work through. And my needs were always cared for. I was never neglected. I don't want to give that wrong impression. But there was something missing. And when I see children acting, and I see myself in it, you know, my heart really does go out to them. Really does go out to them. Maybe it is because a sibling has been hospitalized or things like that, why the parent is absorbed in something else. So what is the heart saying? We've talked about this some. The heart is probably saying, I want attention. Or, now the teacher sees me. I'm not sure what grade I was when I got into the habit of and yeah, it was a habit, but I know why I was doing it. And looking back now, I know why I was doing it. The child could also, or the heart could also be saying, nobody likes me. They don't even, if I show up, whatever. They don't like me anyways. They laugh at me anyways. This summer I was privileged to teach in a community Bible school. I taught the kindergarten class. And little Anna came to my class almost every morning in tears. She'd come. And we'd leave her to her seat. And after a while, she'd kind of thaw a little bit. But I'm like, oh, this child is so shy. But then I was beginning to think there was something a little deeper. I was actually beginning to think there was an attitude. That was the word I was using. Because she had selective hearing. Very selective. When the bell went, very selective hearing. Anyways, it was about halfway through, probably about day five, and I was talking, it was the beginning of the class, we weren't in the lesson yet, and all of a sudden, from over in the other side of the room, shut your talker off. From a four-year-old. Well, I was a little floored, and my talker was off for a few seconds. I didn't know her family well, but I know that in the Bible school, there was also she had two older sisters that were in the Bible school. One was in grade six, and this girl was born with no limbs, no arms, no legs. Well, she had little stumps, and she was able to get around. She'd run, she'd throw baskets in a small basketball hoop, you know, go upstairs. She was very capable, very, very talented in her limitations. But I really, really wondered, after that happened, is she lacking attention at home? You know, Mom and Dad, I'm sure, are very busy with, or have been very busy with, the other children, especially this handicapped sister. And maybe she was even jealous of the attention her sister got. And she needed to have some time out that day. And we talked about respect. But the next day following, I started giving her responsibilities. You know, she could take the offering to the superintendent and things like that. I had no problem. No problem. After that, she was a nice, sweet little girl. So how can we best help? One of the ways, I would say, is to give the child attention. You know, that's what they're wanting, right? If a child needs a Band-Aid, wouldn't you give him one? So if a child needs attention, shouldn't we give them some? There are many suitable ways to give them attention, and the way I did with Anna was to give her responsibility. You know, do you want to take this to the superintendent? And she comes back, and I can thank her, and I can thank her sincerely. She's gotten some attention. She knows she's important for that little bit. Another way to give them attention is to praise them when things have been done well. The show-off children are often the children who the teacher needs to call their name during class. You know, the other classmates hear me say, Thomas. And if it's a Thomas that I'm dealing with, you know, they hear that name often. But do they also hear, thank you, Thomas, that was very kind of you? I hope so. I hope just as much they're hearing the teacher's words of praise. Now, what about if the child is a distraction in the class? He's a show-off in class. That's a problem, isn't it? It's kind of hard to keep the children's attention when someone else has their attention. So what would you recommend? Is it that hard of a topic? It's kind of hard, isn't it? One year I had a student, one of my first years of teaching, who was constantly showing off. Pen lids, funny faces, rulers in his mouth, pencils in his ears, just you name it. And I had a very wise principal. You've heard him this morning already. He suggested I place him at the back of the room. I'm like, what? Like, he has to be within arm's reach. But there was a lot of wisdom in that. I followed his advice, and it worked wonderful for two reasons. The children couldn't see him nearly as well. And besides, the ones that could see him at the back of the room were probably ones who weren't overly impressed. The second reason was the principal had a very good view of him from the window in the door. And yeah, he caught him, I think, that next day. I didn't even see him at the door, and all of a sudden I heard this boy's name being called. Yes, it worked wonderful. But I've done that since many times. The ones who are distractive, put them at the back. It soon wears off if they don't have a following. We must keep going. I don't think there is a clock in this room, and I don't. There is one. What time is it? Okay, thank you. Okay, going on. Some children have very poor self-esteem. And What might be causing this? Why don't they feel good about themselves? Do you want to quickly suggest some reasons? Yes, critical parents. Or older siblings we could put right in there. Mm-hmm. They're used to hearing that, right? Or seeing on their marks that they aren't good. They're used to the feeling that I can't do it.
And if any other children have made fun of them for something they can't do?
They're made fun of. Or just said something unkindly. You mean you didn't even know that answer? Possibly even the teacher. Teacher or parents, I could say, can have expectations that are unrealistic and can cause poor self-esteem to grow in a child. And, you know, as much as we don't want to admit it, there's also the subject of abuse, and that can cause, very quickly can cause poor self-esteem in children. So the heart is saying, I'm a failure. I'm no good at anything. Why am I even trying? A student had transferred to our school and joined my grade 3 class 1 year. My first impression of him is that he was extremely shy and quiet, around pretty much anyone, but especially around me. He could hardly look at me. He was just very, very shy. He had a lot of difficulty expressing himself. Even something like saying his birthday was just about too much. He wouldn't sing. Anything related that you might call singing was just a little growl. It was pretty pathetic. He'd goof off in class, though. And, you know, I'd have to rebuke him. And it would just be like, it would just... These angry eyes are just really downcast. And I really had to pray about that one. And it feels like a breakthrough came in our relationship when I realized that this child was very intelligent. Very intelligent. And I gave him some challenges. Probably an alternate reason for giving challenges was that if he wasn't busy, he was goofing off. So I might as well keep him busy. Let's give him some hard work. He'd gobble it up. He liked it. Around the same time, it was probably October, November, I was addressing his no singing problem. And I sometimes work with children privately. And as the case was with him, I was. And just matching tones. And I remember I had my keyboard in it. He was able to match to an F, no higher. And I was so excited. I was cheering him. Way to go. And we kept working, and he did get higher. But about halfway through the school term, his parents visited my class for the first. They couldn't believe him. He was volunteering answers. He came to the front and he did some math practice with my laser pointer for the classmates. He had volunteered to do it. They told me afterwards that they have a different boy. And I praise God because I had a different boy at school too. I really did. He loved singing. And now even years later, he's actually studying music. He loves to sing. And they told me some things about his past, and they are not even sure themselves what, but it seems like there was something that had traumatized him as a child. They remember one time when he was sleeping in the van. They came home from an event, and they left him sleeping. He was probably a toddler, 3 or 4. And he woke up, and instead of being able to open the door, he somehow locked himself in. And he turned wild. By the time they saw him, found him, the mirror, the driver's mirror had been knocked off. He was just frantic. Was that the trauma? Was there other trauma? I don't know. I really don't know. But his heart, when he came to my class, said, "I cannot sing. I'm no good. My answers are worth nothing." And somehow, as teachers, we have to prove to those children that they are worth something. They're worth a whole lot. They have something to contribute to our class. God doesn't make useless material. They are good at something. How can we best help? There are other ways. And something I would like to suggest is if you have a child who is a poor communicator, has trouble expressing themselves, you really don't hear much about their lives at home unless you are overhearing them talking to their peers. You might pick up on some things. If that is the case, make it a point to communicate yourself with the parents. Because very likely, if the child is not a communicator at school, they are not a communicator at home. And so parents are not hearing tough things that might be happening at school. Just like you are not hearing tough things that might be happening at home. And if you can get a communication tie that's working well, that bridge is crossed. The child can become more secure knowing that mom and dad know what's happening at school. And at school, the teacher knows that dad's gone for a week of meetings. I didn't have to say anything, but the teacher knows. Very valuable. I will give a little story to illustrate this. Partway through a school year, I was asked to take a grade 2 and 3 class where the teacher had been dismissed. Obviously, the entire class had a lot to work through. It had been a tough year so far. But there was one child who was so self-conscious, he didn't talk to me for at least a week. No words. He was just very self-conscious. And after about a month or so, there was a breakthrough. In their family, there was a very serious accident. And it wasn't a death, but it was very serious. And the children, of course, all want to talk about this at school. And we were talking about it as a class. And instead of hearing always from the other children, I asked this student just kind of one-word, two-word questions or that he could answer in one or two words. And because I had been very afraid, what's this ever going to do to him, this bad accident? But it seemed that opened him up. You know, here he was valuable to share something. And it was a couple weeks after that he volunteered to come to the front one morning when it was news class. And he had a little sentence that he wanted to say about his uncle. Yes, I was shocked. And in communicating with his parents, I had not known them before, I found out that he does not talk about school when he's at home. So that was another interesting thing. If I would praise him, and he was a good student, like he learned well. If I would praise him, he would turn red, and it would be like he wants to crawl under his desk. He just hated it when I'd praise him. So that didn't work. So instead of that, I would write notes. And I'd often stick a note in his notebook. Sometimes I'd watch. You know, is he going to get embarrassed with this? And he'd open his book to that lesson. He'd see it. He'd grab it and just stuff it in his pocket. Not even look at it. Just stuff it in his pocket. And I was really close to giving that up until I talked to his mom. And she said, "Thank you so much for writing those notes. They mean so much to him." I'm like, "What? He doesn't even read them." She said, do you know what he does? He hangs them up on the fridge at home. I didn't understand it. But I kept on. Believe me, I did, if that was something that meant a lot to him. And because of how much that meant to him, his mom and I committed ourselves for the rest of that year to keep a journal that he carried back and forth every day. He refused to give it to me. He was too scared to give it to me. So I would get it from his locker. And I would give it to him then at the end of the day. He had to take it home. He could read it. It was open for him. It was positive, or if there was something that needed to be corrected or we worked on that day, it was just kind of, it was a good day. I liked how he sang and whatever, and just a little bit of praise. And it was this daily way that he could receive affirmation from mom and from teacher. And he has that today. I actually asked if I could borrow it for this workshop. And they weren't able to find it soon enough. So it wasn't until he was quite a bit older that he was able to tell his parents that he had been sexually abused in the school van. Suddenly, there were a lot of things that started to make sense. A lot of things. His fear of school, his trouble expressing himself, it made a lot of sense. Even as a youth, he still struggles to believe in himself, to believe that he's good, or that he did something well. When he was in high school, he had done a project, a science fair project type of thing, and as the rest of the school, we went through at a different time than the adults came to see these science projects. And I was talking to his parents afterwards. They said, how did he do? I said, very well. Like, he spoke out. We could hear him well. She said, oh, that is just what he's going to need to hear. Even today, just a lot of trouble believing in himself. So that the kind of praise, if it's a way that they're comfortable with, is what they're needing to hear. There are other ways that teachers can help. Taking an interest in their lives, their families, asking about the little brothers or sisters, even if it's something you know the answer for, ask it anyway. They'll say, she's interested. She wants to know. Maybe they went on a trip. Maybe they have chores. Maybe they have new puppies. Well, why not go and see them? Often these children have a lot of trouble expressing themselves, and so it takes them a long time to say anything. And so the teacher has to have time to listen. And so we often don't do it. And be real gentle, very gentle. There's probably something that's hurting. You might not understand everything, but you'll at least try. And even to tell them, I don't understand how much that must hurt to have seen their dog get killed on the highway. Yeah, that would be sad. You liked your dog, didn't you? They know that you care. And that's what's important. We have the dreamy, absent-minded children that really are in la-la land. So why is this? It might be their nature. It truly might be their nature. It could also be, though, that there is a special stress that today you're saying, she's just not with me today. It could be that someone has a broken leg. It could be that dad is gone. It could be that mom is sick. It could be, their puppy was killed. Could be that the favorite cow had a calf and it was dead. And that's what they're thinking about. I think their hearts are saying, I wish the teacher would know. I wish she would know. So how can we help? There are different times. There have been different times when I've had students that, I don't know, necessarily dreamy, absent-minded, but that I know that if there's something stressful, if there's something unusual, their little cart is tipped. It's hard for them to concentrate. And I've asked parents, do you mind informing me? And it was often that child's dad needed to be gone a lot with his work. And it seemed to be when dad was gone that I would see these actions. He would never tell me. I wouldn't know it. And sometimes it was after the entire deal was passed and everything in his life was back to normal, I would find out. Did you know he was gone that week? I'd be like, that explains it. Now I know why he was acting like that. So sometimes just asking parents. I've had parents say, I had no idea it made such a difference to them. You know, they think they're sending them off to school, that's normal. Why would the teacher have to know that? Something that's happening at home. How else can we help? I say, listen, listen, listen. Listen before school to the chatter. Listen during news class. Listen during lunchtime discussions. Recognize if there is some stress that's causing this child to be distracted. Empathizing with a child goes a lot further than scolding. It really does. Once I had a lad that looked a little bit like that. Wasn't getting any work done. And I took him aside at a break and I said, what are they doing at home today? He's like, they're starting corn silage. Really? And you wish you could be at home, right? Yeah. So just, you know what? Try to do your best. You'll soon be able to go home, you know. But he knew then that I knew. But he didn't tell that to me on his own. I had to ask. And we have the shy ones. The ones who play soccer like this lad. Why? Why is this? There's several reasons. What are the causes for a child being shy or withdrawn from play? Okay, it's a new game and we don't know how. Or, I'm no good at it. So, I'm not a fast runner, so I'm not going to leave the base. Or they might say, I might get hurt. Right? It's very possible that the play is too rough. Why they don't want to join in. That's possible. Maybe the child has been mocked of before. On how they're playing. There are other, this looks like playtime or not really school time, but there are also times in class So think about a child that is very shy in your class. So they're not going to answer questions. They're going to speak very quietly. Why are the reasons for that? They're scared of making a mistake. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the fear of failure. I still think there's another big one. We're talking young children, right? Say grade one. Okay. They might get laughed at. Have you ever been talking to a child, let's say after church? You say, "How old are you?" And the mom answers. Or you say, "Do you know when your birthday is?" And someone answers for them. Do you think that's ever filters into our classrooms? When they're here now in grade one, and you ask a question, well, they're not used to answering. Someone has always answered for me anyway. So how can we help? There are ways to encourage participation. Help those shy students gain confidence. If they say an answer, that's right. Yes, we'll encourage them on to say more. That was good. I have, for many years, had news class before we even have devotions, and they come to the front. That's my policy. I want them to be at the front and have this little experience public speaking. And it will take some students quite a chunk of the year before they're willing to do that. But I really want them to. I really want them to have that experience. Now, if it's on the playground that the child isn't participating, I would encourage you to get out there and be aware of what's happening. Is the play too rough? We'll then deal with that. Encourage participation, though. I have found an excellent way to do this. Instead of myself running with the shy child in prisoner's base, get one of the good, confident players, popular ones, go to them and say, "You know, I need your help. This little girl is a little scared of playing. Do you want to coach her? Give her some tips." Young children love responsibility. I have had very good success with that. In my kindergarten class this year, I had a highly special needs child. He could run a little bit. He wasn't a good runner. He needed someone to be with him because he was not able to break his fall. So if he would fall, it would be on his nose. So the children took turns. You know, someone would volunteer to run with him at recess. Some of my best memories of that were when my big grade four boys wanted to run with Josiah. They were playing soccer, running kind of like this. "Good, give it a kick." That was excellent, and they loved it. There are ways, but be gentle. And then we have those students that are proud, maybe boastful. I need to just come walking over here. And we say, why are they always bragging? Why is their lunchtime talk always bigger and better than the rest. I would like to suggest that a possible cause is that there's some insecurity in the family. Possibly they even hear Dad bragging up John Deere. And, I don't know, this truck or whatever it is. Insecure people seem to think that they need to prove to the rest that they're good at something. And so they boast, they brag. How can we help? Well, maybe a devotions on it is appropriate. I had a student who came from a single parent home. And in many ways, he stood out from the majority of the class. That shouldn't have been a problem. But there seemed to be an insecurity element in him that he needed to prove himself. At first I thought that it was just a little boy talking big, but the more I got to know him, like, no, there's something else. And one of his biggest challenges was to admit that he was wrong. And to even admit that his answer was wrong. He could argue and make excuses like few children that I know. And, you know, when a pretty good excuse is given, it's easy to pass it off, right? Oh, he forgot. Did you say that? Well, he didn't hear me saying that. And he could just very smoothly make excuses. I had to learn that I had to consistently tell him, no, this answer is wrong. It was. You don't have to explain it away. It's wrong. And I think that the best thing for me to do in that situation was to be able to, when I could, praise him genuinely. There were many times when I had to tell him, that's enough. You know, he doesn't have to talk more about that. And but if I can praise him for when he's done right, he knows that he's not good for nothing. Do you have thoughts on this? On this difficult one, I think. Well, you might think of more questions or things later. There are some additional things that we should ask before we label anything. Is he comfortable? Do his clothes fit? Is he wearing a girl's coat? Is he comfortable? Is he hungry? Is that why he's lethargic? Has he had breakfast? Is he tired? Is he feeling sick? Can he see? Can he hear well? These are all things to think about. Does his desk fit? Is he comfortable where he's sitting? Is she the youngest in the family? An only child? How do the parents speak to the child? All these are questions that we can continually be thinking. Is this what is affecting their behavior? If there's something we can do about it, it's easy to fix it if they just need to get glasses. That's an easy fix. Our classes have many different needs. And as this shot from my class 1 year shows, there are many different needs right there. You know, Jesus' life and Jesus' ministry, he worked with people of different needs. And I like the verse in Luke 4:18 where he said, where he was reciting from Isaiah, "He hath anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He hath sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captives, and recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty them that are bruised." And in my Bible, I have written there, Jesus taught special ed. You know, he had a class of many needs. Now, for the rest of the time that we have left, I would like to just go over a few techniques to open this heart communication. How can we get to the heart? What are some clues that we could use? Number one I have is privacy. People whose hearts are hurting long for privacy. Secondly, I would say eye-to-eye contact, not the teacher towering over the child. Sometimes we sit and we face each other, but I often kneel beside the child so that I can look right into their face. I work with young children, and it's not quite as frightening then, maybe. The third technique, I would say, is physical contact. Many of these children with these heart needs are craving love in some way or another. That's a pretty easy way you can do it. If it's a hand on their knee or a hug. This year, in history, I was reading the book Days of Terror. And after one class, or I was finished the chapter or whatever, we were just ready to talk about it. One of my girls put up her hand. She said, "I'm cold." I said, "Come." And she came, and I was sitting on my stool, and I said, "I think this is what you need." I gave her a hug, and she cried for the next 3 minutes while we discussed the story. It was a scary part in the story, and she was cold. Show you care. Tell them you care. Write notes to show that you care. Taking time for students as individuals. It's not a class. Yes, it's a class, but they're individuals. I want to hear from you. If you can convey that feeling, that sentiment to them, you are showing that you care and that you have time and you want to hear from them. I would also remind us that God made each one unique. God made each of the children with strengths. And sometimes we just have to look and find out what these strengths are. Something else that I need to remind myself of many times is that God has shown me a lot of mercy, a lot of love, a lot of grace. A favorite verse in Jeremiah 31 says, "The Lord hath appeared of old unto me, saying, Yea, I have loved thee with an everlasting love. Therefore with loving kindness have I drawn thee." That's how God has dealt with me. No impatience. Never saying, "I don't have time." He has dealt with mercy, with much mercy and love and grace in my behalf. And I hope that this school year can be one where we can do this to our children as well. That we can meet their heart needs. Again, at the end of this talk, I would remind you that not always does a misbehavior mean a deep, dark need. Sometimes they're just naughty. They're just disrespectful, and we have to deal with it. But these reoccurring problems, I challenge you to take a look just a little under the surface and see if there are other needs that are here in this child's life that you could help them with. Are there any thoughts, any questions you have before we close? Yes. That you don't.
That I don't reach around. If there are just a wide variety of them. I mean, I know we're not asked to be Jesus. That's not what I'm hearing you say. But practically, how do you think about that? Because it's definitely something that's caught in the past.
Do they interact with you before school?
Mm-hmm.
And that's maybe when you feel it, that they all want to say something to you.
Right.
Do you have suggestions? There are some children that I'm going to guess are louder than the others, that can usually make their voice heard if they desire to be heard. And you have many opportunities during the day to hear those. Sometimes I have had to say, reach for the child who's at the back and say, what were you going to say? When someone interrupts with, you know, a louder voice.
Tell us about your years past. If that could happen to someone.
Yes. I say, is there any news? And immediately, there's one girl whose hand will go up. Without fail. Yeah. She has news. She often had news. If there were 5 others that have news, maybe she didn't have news that morning. They'll come to the front and they'll just say their 1 or 2 sentence, hopefully, and go and sit down again. I know some teachers will use a timer. Sometimes when there are a lot of children that want to have news that morning, after, you know, a big event, I'll say, okay, there are lots of people that want to have news. Think about what you want to say, because we're going to have to keep it really short. That usually helps too. Sometimes I just have to cut it off and say, you know what? It's time for devotions now. We're going to have to hear the rest of the news at lunchtime. Did I answer your question well enough? What about you?
How long
is your news contact? Oh, less than 5 minutes. It's kind of when they're getting settled and their books put away and when I'm choosing songs for devotions. You mean you do that before school? Other questions? Yes?
I have already skipped the story time and just their story time.
Oh, that they would have their news. Oh, yes. And they didn't complain about that.
No, they loved
it. They wanted to have their news. Interesting. Okay, I think I must dismiss you. Thank you for your attention.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.